Recently, I received an email from a senior disciple of mine, Grihastha devotee, which he stated that he's feeling the squeeze of corporate life, and probably his salary is going to be cut in half, and there's an idea for his wife to carve out a new career based on life coaching, stating that both of them have a lot of experience in life coaching already in their activities in preaching to young people Krishna consciousness and guiding them in their lives, both the spiritual aspects and the material aspects. And specifically mentioned that the lady who plans to do this wants to do so by taking a course in neuro-linguistic programming, with the idea to get some certification to make you look as if you're qualified. And this talk that I'm going to give is going to be about my very strong reservations about, not reservations, let's be frank, I don't like this at all. It's opposition to this. I'm not going to mention that, no need to mention the names of the devotees concerned. Quite possibly, quite likely, it may become clear to some who listen to this, who I'm referring to, which might be embarrassing for the husband and wife who I'm referring to, or who I'm particularly addressing. But although I'm particularly addressing them, I'm also addressing a whole trend, it seems, among devotees to get into this new agey, more than semi-materialistic life coaching, and in this way mess up their own spiritual life and that of others. So I'll just read some stuff first. After that, I'm going to lie down because I have a slip disc. And thank you to everyone who's sending me all kinds of medical advice. I do appreciate it, and I don't appreciate it because I'm under treatment, and thank you, but all this idea, do this exercise and do that exercise. I'm not supposed to do any exercise in this condition. I'm just supposed to be lying down, and I'm only sitting, kneeling now because I need to read the computer to do this. And so anyway, after some back and forward on these subjects, email coming into me, the first online course, the idea is to do life coaching online and to make some income by doing this. Although if you'd got into it 2 or 3 years ago, you'd have a good chance of success, but it's getting a more and more crowded field. So it's less and less likely to be successful. Anyway, the first online course will be a premarital course, which will contain the following topics. Course title, Recipe for an Enriching Relationship, Core Product, 30 Days Challenge. Point 1, Empowerment, Cause and Effect. Point 2, CSBR, Conditioning State, Behavior and Result. Point 3, Paradigm Shift. Point 4, Our Reality is Created Inside Out. Point 5, Secret of the Mind. SB 511, that must be Canto 5, Chapter 11. The NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming Philosophy, is quite in sync with this. Point 6, My Focus. Point 7, My Conditioning. Point 8, My Change. And then it goes on to Understanding the Male and Female Psychology and Its Applications. Men, Gravity. 1, Gravity. 2, Celibacy. A good brahmachari is a good grihastha. 3, certainty. 4, be sensitive. Love languages. 5, gifting. 6, appreciation. 7, aspire to live together. 8, give a specific time to develop the relationship. 9, significance. Women. 1, chastity. 2, satisfaction. 3, variety. Food, dressing up, physical. 4, how to bring your husband under control by supporting him selflessly. Sat Sriya, Sat Pitir Yata. That's a quotation from Bhagavatam. 5, love and connection. 6, soft speech. 7, facilitating a spiritual atmosphere at home. Then next point, essentials to live a married life, expectations and silent rules. One, expectations and silent rules. Two, agreements, marriage vows and others. Three, communication and active listening skills. Four, personality types. Five, understanding FOO, family of origin. Six, consultative decision making. Seven, giving the right space and giving the right time. Eight, role of spirituality, when the soul is taken care of, the rest is two. Nine, compatibility, astrological maturity, core values, interests. There should be a life coaching. This is a separate stream. The clients, people who take the above course may come as couples. I'm just going to skip through stuff because it gets through a bit much. Okay, so I did a little reading up on neuro-linguistic programming, and as expected, it's some new agey psychopabulum, psychobabble, pseudo-scientific in the sense that it uses all these kind of terms. But even then, if you say what is mainstream psychology, psychotherapy, psychiatry, all this, it's all highly speculative. And a major problem of all these worldviews, which they directly or indirectly espouse, is, it's a worldview without Krishna. There's a lot of problems with that. A lot of problems. All our problems come from forgetting Krishna. So this whole idea of teaching people how to live without Krishna is itself a big problem. And it's going to take you away from Krishna consciousness. The thing is that if you set yourself up, you pretend to be something that you're not, then you have to start living and according to that model that you make. If you start in telling people you live like this, and you don't put in Krishna, then when you meet people, you're going to have to talk to them with this roundabout way, avoiding Krishna. And we already see so many devotees, even some very big devotees in our movement, by trying to get a bigger crowd to listen to them, they speak in a way, they speak what people want. People don't want to hear about Krishna in general. We don't get big crowds, but if we talk about how you can be a success, how you can lead a more happy life in this material world, which is nonsense, because leading a happy life without Krishna, the whole idea is nonsense, then you're going to start thinking like that yourself, and then you're going to spoil your life and misrepresent what devotional service is about. Just like, for instance, when Gaur Gopal was bursting onto the scene with these Joker Minute shows, then we got so many people telling us, oh, can you do a program like that? Well, no, we don't want to do programs like that. But they think that this is what ISKCON is offering, some kind of vaguely almost spiritual jokes. And from what I can see, he's gone further and further away from that, so that there's not even a semblance of Krishna consciousness. That's the danger. Once you start adjusting yourself so much that you don't even say that you're a devotee, you can't come out clearly and let people know that you're a devotee, then you start leading a double life and you start to take on that identity. Peshas Kritanyai, the insect who's caught by a bigger insect meditates on out of fear, out of that insect, and becomes that insect. Yadrishi yadrishi shraddha siddhi bhavati tadrishi. According to our outlook and our beliefs, that's what we become. You may say, well, we don't really believe all this stuff. Then you're a hypocrite. If you're saying all these things just because you want to make money out of people and you're guiding people and doing life coaching for them, but you don't really believe in it, and actually we believe in pure Krishna consciousness, but we tell people things like this because we've got to make a living, then you're a big cheat. You're taking the position of someone, the blind leading the blind. You're not blind. You have knowledge of the real goal of life, but you're deliberately representing something yourself as something else. That's a kind of cheating. Okay, let's go through this. Empowerment, cause and effect, conditioning state, paradigm shift. It's all the same kind of things that there are dozens of people out there to all this new agey stuff, paradigm shift. Oh, what paradigm shift? They shift from one kind of materialism to... Basically, we don't see anyone goes through any big paradigm shift unless they come out of the consciousness of a being an enjoyer of this material world and shift to the understanding of being a devotee of Krishna, surrender to Krishna, living only for Krishna's living only for Krishna's pleasure. Now, I had someone read out to me the 11 presuppositions of neurolinguistic programming, and it's pure Mayavad. Yeah. And that comes up in the next point here, that this disciple of mine has written, our reality is created inside out. This is nonsense. This is Mayavad, our reality. Reality, if you want to accept Krishna, you want to accept his teachings, you want to accept Bhagavad Gita as it is, then reality is what Krishna says. Sarvam etad ritang manye yanmang vadasi keshava. We accept what Krishna says, we understand that to be reality. And our reality... Our reality. Well, you could say in one sense it's our reality in as we perceive it. But this, to say our reality gives the idea that truth is what you believe it to be. You make the... Our reality is created inside out. That means you shape the world according to how you see it. But it's not like that. It's not like that. You may think that the way you think shapes your world, but the world is as it is. The reality, in this presuppositions, they're talking about reality, but they never define what reality is. They talk about success. They don't define what success is. And I saw in this podcast done by this lady, showing about this success, that success, but any kind of success without Krishna consciousness. It's all, everything is a complete defeat as long as we don't inquire into Atma Tattva, the reality of our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this idea, our reality is created inside out, is absolute relativism. What is reality? Is there no absolute? Everyone has their own reality. That's what it's implying. But Krishna is the absolute truth. It's not if I believe in Krishna, then Krishna exists. But it's my reality. So if I don't accept what Krishna says, then we don't care about Krishna. It's pure Mayavad. Then the next point, secret of the mind, SB 511. The NLP philosophy is quite in sync with this. This is a big illusion. Much of what psychology says may have some link. Or some kind of reflection of what is stated in Gita and the teachings of Jarabharat in Bhagavatam, the teachings of Rishabhdev in Bhagavatam. It has some link with that, but what is it? Is it yatha bhasha yatha tamaha? What is that from Bhagavatam? Ritayatam napratiyeta napratiyeta chatmani tadvidyadatmano mayang yatha bhaso yatha tamaha. Krishna says anything conceived of as reality without a relationship with me is simply an illusion. It's like a reflection in the darkness. So a reflection has some semblance of the reality, but it's not the reality. It's something, if you say that this NLP philosophy is quite in sync with Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 11, it's something like saying that the atheistic Sankhya philosophy is quite in sync with the theistic Sankhya philosophy. Yeah, great, sure. You've got all the elements. You've got the five sense objects, the five knowledge acquiring senses, the five active senses, the mind, the modes of material nature, the material elements. It's all there, but you're missing Krishna. Therefore, it's atheistic. So even if all the elements are there, but Krishna's not there, then you miss the whole point. But you're fooled into thinking, yeah, this is, we got everything. We saw Sankhya, we saw everything. What about A, B, C, D? Everything's there. And it's quite the opposite. It's quite the opposite. Although it seems to be the same, it's quite the opposite. The psychology, the atheistic, impersonalistic psychology. Why? Because the whole aim is karma, how to be happy in this world. But that's the whole problem. In Gita, Lord Krishna says that the whole problem is karma, the desire to be happy in this world. And this mundane psychology of, if you want to pretend that neuralistic programming is not psychology, it's not psychotherapy, you can pretend it's something different. But basically, it rests on the same suppositions, as does every so-called philosophy of this world, that we're here to enjoy it. And that's the cause of all our problems. And to think that you can adjust the problems without bringing in Krishna, it simply exacerbates the problems. And someone who's got knowledge of Krishna shouldn't do this. Then point six, my focus. Point seven, my conditioning. Point eight, my change. My. It's all self-centered. This is psychotherapy and life coach. It's all about me and my mind and what I can become. You can be a success. Just feeding the ego, that's all. Understanding the male and female psychology and its applications, gravity, celibacy, a good brahmacharya is good grihastha. Good luck selling that one to materialistic people. Ha, ha, ha. Tell them to be a brahmachari. You can tell them, but they have to be a devotee. Otherwise, there's no hope of them being a brahmachari in family life. They get married with the idea of enjoying this world. Certainty, be sensitive, gifting, appreciation, blah, 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 on and on and on. One, you see, what do we have in the Vedic culture, which we're supposed to be representing, and not this psychobabble from a failed civilization, the Western civilization, which spiritually is absolutely a disaster, morally is a disaster. Instead of taking all the ideas from there, we should take the ideas from the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture, there is the concept of, no, the concept is absolutely intrinsic to Vedic culture, the understanding of dharma. And you marry as a religious duty. And all this stuff about relationships, this, and the man should be sensitive. What if he's not sensitive? He has his conditioning, and you can try and neurolinguistically program him up, down, inside out, back to front, left to right. But his nature is, he's a bit cold by nature. Okay, so you're married to, but he's dutiful. That's the first thing, he has to be dutiful. He has to be dutiful means he has to provide. He has to be a good role model. Everyone can't be perfect. It's all coming from the Bollywood nonsense that you marry and the man is very nice, the girl is very nice. But in reality, people do have their conditioning. And you may say, well, NLP addresses that in a completely unrealistic way. They say you can reprogram people. But that's not the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. It's just like Arjuna, Krishna told him, a kshatriya, you have a certain nature, you work with that nature, you just can't expect to just, this neuralistic programming, one of the things they say, you can completely change the people's way of thinking. But that's not the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. The teachings of Bhagavad Gita is that you have a certain kind of nature, you work with that and become Krishna conscious. It may be someone's not very loving by nature, they're a bit cold, a bit distant, but still, the wife has to go along with that and serve him and adjust to that. If she thinks, oh, my husband isn't very appreciative, I've been trying a neuro-linguistic program him for so many years, doesn't work, okay, forget it. That's what it comes to, that the relationship isn't for all our effort. The relationship isn't, you put the relationship first, but this is the problem, you put the relationship first, but you put... That means how I want to be happy in this relationship. Okay, but that's not the first consideration. The first consideration is that you marry for dharma. And once you're married, that's it, finished. And then there's all this things, relationships, this, that. If you just make the commitment to live together dutifully, according to the rules of dharma, and serve Krishna, that should be enough without all this stuff, all this making it so complicated with so many psychological ideas. And the husband has to be like this, and all these things. And if he's not like that, then they blame him. And the women, okay, these kind of things. Well, they're teaching women chastity, satisfaction, variety. So, okay, all right, that's the kind of things that girls should learn at home, but instead they go to the school and become like prostitutes from the very beginning. They learn how to flirt with the boys and try and attract them in a completely unchaste way. So you got, it's a hard job trying to reprogram these women, no doubt, when they're raised in a society which encourages them to be like prostitutes. They have to hook a man by their feminine charms. Horrible, this so-called women's liberation, which just free to whore themselves out here and there. Okay, essentials to live a married life, all the expectations and silent rules, agreements, communications, active listening skills. Oh, just too complicated. Too complicated. Okay, now let me see if I can find that stuff about this presuppositions. Let me see if I can find that. There's just so much nonsense in these 11 presuppositions. The presuppositions of NLP are neither laws, governing rules, or regulations, and we do not even claim this to be true. Well, if it's not true, why the hell are you teaching them, you rascal? If you don't claim it to be true and you want to guide people's lives by it, it's straightforwardly saying we're a bunch of cheaters. We don't know what we're teaching. We don't know if it's true or not, but we believe in it. And we're gonna reprogram your whole life on the basis of this. You've got to be an idiot to get into this. Devotees are not supposed to be idiots, but you shouldn't use the knowledge that we got from Prabhupada and mix it up with this psychobabble to cheat people. This NLP is just another kind of cheating, right from the beginning. We do not claim the presuppositions of NLP to be true. It's just that from the outset, you're telling people we're cheating you. We don't claim it's true, but anyway, you do this and you do that. People have got to be really stupid to take this. NLP does not concern itself with whether a specific belief is true or not. Well, then you miss the whole point of life. The whole point of life is to find out what is true and what is not. So immediately, it just minimizes and trivializes the real point of life. It primarily focuses on the most effective means through which any goal or desired outcome can be attained. But you just said you don't claim that it's true, so how can you say it's the most effective means? It's simply contradictory, hypocritical from the very start. Facilitate change. It promises to facilitate change in an endless number of ways. This has been going on since in the 1970s, they say they had the idea you can reprogram people you can take anyone from any situation and make them into anything. Then what happened? Where are all the Einsteins that they produced? It's simply big talk. That's all. Unconditionally accept people. If someone tells me to unconditionally accept them, I'd like to make an experiment. Kick them in the face. And then see if they unconditionally accept you. Huh? Yeah, I should look. Yeah, I'm being told I should look in there. Hari Bol, are you unconditionally accepting me over there? Kick them in the face. And if they say, oh, yeah, I unconditionally accept you, then go on, kick them in the face again. See how long they'll unconditionally accept you. Of course, you. While we can reject a person's attitude or habits, we will never dismiss a person. Okay, go work, go check some, get some psychopaths. See if you can reform them. Big claims. Behavior and change are to be assessed regarding context and ecology. What are they talking about? Here we go, here's something. They say, all meaning is context dependent. That means there's no absolute truth. It's absolute impersonalism. All meaning is context dependent. Rubbish. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. That is true in all times, all places, all circumstances. You're subscribing to something which is the most demoniac idea. which undermines the whole basis of Krishna consciousness. And the next line, it's very easy to take something that's been said out of context and interpret it differently from its original meaning. So you may say, well, I'm taking something out of context and interpreting it differently from its original meaning. But this is a very simple sentence. All meaning is context dependent. That is an absolute statement. All meaning is context dependent. So what if I say this statement is not, this statement, all meaning is context dependent. I say, well, no, that sentence is not true because it's context dependent. Then it's self-contradictory, like pretty much everything here. We evaluate behavior and change in terms of who our clients are capable of becoming. Yeah, becoming the guru of people. And you're doing it for money, which means that you're not really interested. You're really interested not so much in the people, in how much you can empty out of their pockets. That's what it comes down to. You're pretending to be their friend, but you're changing them up, shaking them up, shaking them down, whatever. The impact it will have on the person's life overall. What about your own life? You have this great gift of Krishna consciousness, and the impact is, after all these years, you're talking all this psycho babble. Presupposition 4. Appreciate other people's interpretation of the world. Okay, Mr. Adolf Hitler, please get up from the grave. And your interpretation of the world is that we need to kill all the Jews and we need to invade all these other countries and kill so many people. We appreciate your interpretation of the world. This is nonsense. This is rascaldom. We shouldn't appreciate demoniac interpretations of the world. There is right and what? There's another kind of Mayavad. Appreciate other people's interpretation of the world. Again, that means there's no absolute right, no absolute wrong. That means that Krishna and all of scripture is wrong. What are you getting into? This is horrible. If we desire to communicate well, it's important that we have a grounded appreciation of someone else's unique model of the world. My unique model of the world. Yeah, we're all in Maya in unique ways. We're all forgetting, we all have our own unique ways of forgetting Krishna. All people have alternative ways of interpreting and experiencing life, different beliefs, values, filters, etc. By understanding and respecting these differences, opposed to jumping to assumptions or judging, better trust-based communications will naturally occur. That means you don't have any belief system, you don't have any moral compass, because you're ready to adjust to whatever. Someone comes to you and says that, well, actually, I rape my children every day, but I feel it's very nice, and maybe you could give me some advice because some people don't like it. Yeah, well, I appreciate your appreciate your worldview. And I mean, no, it's wrong. Actually, what do you do then? You should call the police and have the guy thrown in prison. Now another presupposition: all people, all of the time, are doing the very best they can. This has no link with reality. Just here we have a construction going on at ISKCON Salem, and we have to supervise all the workers, because if you don't say they're screwing in screws, and if you don't supervise them, they won't put the screw in straight. They'll just do as quickly as they can to finish the job as quickly as they can because they get paid for the amount of work they do, not the quality of work they do. So it's not that they're doing it's not that they're doing the very best they can do. It's not true at all. There's no relationship with reality to say that all people all of the time are doing the very best they can do. This is rubbish. Complete rubbish. Don't try to read people's minds. And what are you doing with all of this? You're trying to recalibrate people's minds without reading their minds, right? Without understanding. and on and on and on. Presupposition 8, we each own our minds. We don't, we're not in control of our minds. We don't own our minds, our minds are out of control, that's the problem. Again, making things very complicated. Presupposition 9, people have all the resources they need to become successful. Then what the hell are you doing? What are you doing guiding them? If they have all the resources they need to be successful. Okay. Our goal is to help our clients become more aware of their own potential. Yeah, but you can't make a donkey into a horse racing a championship racing horse, or you can't make a crippled horse into a race winning horse. People have different levels of potential. Again, it's people don't have the same potential. It's a nonsense idea. Everyone has the potential to become fully Krishna conscious, but materially, not everyone has the same potential. You just can't. Okay, you take your neuro-linguistic programming, take some auto rickshaw driver and make him prime minister material. Just randomly choose someone. See if you can do it. It's bluffing people. Bluffing. Simply bluffing. There is no such thing as failure. The presupposition 10, only feedback. Then you contradict your own guru. Where you contradict Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Where the Arjuna says, what about the failed yogi? There is failure. You either... Just like in archery, you hit the target or you don't hit the target. If you don't hit the target, you fail to hit the target. If you're not number one in the Olympics, that's your aim to be number one, then you failed in doing so. So to say there's no such thing as failure, it's just an illusion. You can say that failure is the pillar of success, okay, you can learn from that, but to say there's no such thing as failure is just rubbish, misleading. So this is very dangerous, very, very dangerous. It's, and another thing is, just I was giving the example of Gaur Gopal. Maybe I shouldn't have said his name, but he's a prime example of someone who has achieved some modicum of success materially, but is really going a long, long way away from Krishna consciousness. And you may say that, well, secretly or privately, he is in Krishna consciousness, but from all external appearances, well, to external appearances, he looks like an ISKCON brahmachari, but the way he talks, you'd never guess he was a devotee of Krishna, and even he doesn't convey that. So it's a very dangerous trend that people, they get this knowledge from Prabhupada and they get some confidence in dealing with others and guiding others, and then they want to use that for guiding others in a way that people want to be guided. How to become a material success, which is nonsense anyway. Instead of guiding them in what they really need to know, which is to know about Krishna. It's much easier to tell people, yeah, have a wonderful life, have the best of both worlds or whatever. But it's misleading. And I've seen, I was just shown on, someone showed me someone, some young man who is a life coach and showing his... They're supposed to be they're initiated devotees, but you would never guess from what they say and the way they present themselves in their Facebook profile that they're devotees. And the woman has her hair all loose like this. And you do whatever you like, but if you want to be my disciple, then... At least my disciple. There are different gurus in ISKCON and different approaches, but I cannot endorse this. If you don't have enough money for your family, well, shall I say, I could send you money if you like, or I could arrange for someone to sponsor you or whatever, but don't kill yourself and mislead others. What happens is, who's your base clientele is ISKCON devotees, who you already cultivated in a Krishna conscious way. And now you're going to branch out into something different and take them along with you. I can't support this. Hare Krishna. So as a postscript or an afterthought, it could be said that, well, you're just getting accreditation, so people take you more seriously. I did talk about that a bit more. I'll speak about it a little bit more. You may say, well, it's just like, say you're going to work in the IT field. A devotee might work in the IT field, so they go and get a degree in IT, and they take some training in that. So what's the harm? If it's just for making some income, there is a lot of difference, because in the IT field, there's no underlying philosophy. Of course, in everything in material life, the underlying philosophy is eat, drink, sleep, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. but here there's a whole approach to there are statements made about reality. Reality is what you make it in your mind. I can't remember exactly what it is. Bogus statements, and you're directly dealing with people's lives and minds. It's a tool, like learning IT is a tool, but this is, and the IT tool can be used in a good way or a bad way. And you can say this neuro-linguistic mumbo-jumbo can also be used in a good way or a bad way, but it's inherently bad because it's riddled with Mayavad nonsense and ideas that are antithetical to what is actual reality as presented in the Vedic literature. And if you say, well, you're just getting accreditation, well, how could you sit through days of that? This horrible thing. I just feel like screaming just seeing it written down. And you can see you are affected by it. You can't say you're not affected by it, because that little summary of what you wanted to teach, it brings in these neuro-linguistic neo-Mayavad ideas that reality is what you produce in your mind. You're affected. You're diseased. After all these years of practicing Krishna consciousness and hearing from Prabhupada and his followers and Prabhupada's books, and it's shocking how you can be so diseased. It's so dangerous, you see, to stray off the straight and narrow path. And I guess maybe you're victims of various trends within Vaishnava society at the present time to speak in indirect ways and pose yourself as a life coach for materialistic people to fulfill their materialistic desires. Yeah, I'm angry. I should be angry. You may not like that. You may feel it's humiliating for you, but, or you may feel just like you did that little anecdote of the Buddha, how anger, someone comes up to the Buddha, he's all angry at the Buddha, and the Buddha tells him, well, I don't accept your insults, and it'll just bounce back on you, which is not the teachings that we heard from Srila Prabhupada. Go and look, Nectar of Instruction, verse 1, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam. Always Srila Prabhupada says, when he talks about managing anger, then he sometimes he quotes Narottam Das, the Krodha Bhakti Dveshi Jane. Anger should be directed against persons who are envious of devotees. And Srila Prabhupada always gives the example of Hanuman and Arjuna, who are angry for Rama and Krishna, and how Krishna incited Arjuna to be angry. He wanted to be angry. So it's a Buddhistic teaching, not our Vaishnav teaching that you're giving. It's not invalid, but it's not the way that the prominent and prime way that our devotees teach it. I'm just wondering that if you're thinking, oh, Guru Maharaj is getting angry at me, and but I'm not taking the insult, so it'll rebound on him. Became a Buddhist. The anger of the guru is meant for the purification of the disciple. If you can take it, all well and good. Otherwise, you're in very, very serious spiritual trouble. I have to say it frankly. It's all this being nice and all this and that. Well, take it or leave it. It's up to you. Hare Krishna.
Let me just see if that's all I wanted to say about that little postscript.
Oh yeah, there was a little bit more I wanted to say. That because you've been teaching others for years and in Krishna consciousness, and others will take you, others do take you as a devotional authority, and then they'll think that what you're saying, it's all fine and it's all well and good, and they'll be misled. And unless you've taught them so well, which I hope that they're not, that they're on more on the philosophical than the sentimental platform, they will understand that what you're saying is not the teachings of the pure Vaishnava acharyas and of Shastra. And then they'll just leave you. All right, so on to the next thing.